He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Hello to our show for this week. And Jay, I think, is out of the country and may have some comments for us about that, the latest that he's learned. But I'd like to start out by saying on previous shows, we've been talking a little bit about the increased changes in technological designs of the interior dashboards of the new cars coming online all the time and changing every year. And one of the comments that I think we've listened to or talked to about has been the increasing use of dash-wide or almost dash car interior-wide dashboards or screens that are taking over all the jobs that we used to do with simple things like dials, push buttons, and similar earlier technology. I have noticed, I will notice, and Jay, I think, will notice too. I don't know where this technology has gone into the European cars or not, because I'm not sure whether Jay drives anything other than the cars he has available for him. But he does drive cars over here, and we did comment on a recent show about this whole comment that I'm grouching about today, everybody. The trouble with screens, as I see it going forward, is that they take a lot of time with your eyes and distracting you from driving to manage those screens and go through the menus and find what you want to do. Especially if you can't set those settings up before you start moving forward in the car for your drive to wherever you're going. Examples. First of all, you've got to find the area on the screen that has to do with your climate control system. And Jay may be able to clarify the simplicity of these better than I think they are, because I don't think they're simple at all. Then you've got to go to a radio and set your station and hope you don't want to change channels, which you have to do if you move out of listing areas in let's say as leaving our listing area in the northwest corner and head towards Fairfield County, Connecticut, or anywhere else that where you lose the station's reach that you have here when you're driving around our corner. Then you've got areas for seat heaters, things like seat heaters. You've got to find the seat heater menu on the screens. You know, all these things were earlier and are on all my vehicles, because I don't have any of this. Well, I do have a couple now, but all these items, these three items and more, are simplified and most of the vehicles I still own, in that you've got a dashboard with push buttons and seat and various pictures of what you want to do. And it is a lot easier to find where those are for future use once you purchase a new vehicle that has these things in them, so that you don't have to take your eyes off the road to access what you want to do while you're moving along. Jay?
Well, I think, you know, we've noticed that manufacturers tend to try to, you know, find whatever they think is the best way to go and be somewhat consistent, at least with, you know, their different models and from one model to another. But, you know, there are changes and there are manufacturers pulling back from the all screen and only screens. And we can, you know, we can talk about this forever. I do think, you know, we do agree that dials and buttons are great. I think what's important, what I find is how you can keep control of your hand hovering over a screen, but even over a knob or a button. And
well,
some cars, and I think of Mercedes, for instance, have a little hand pad where you can put the palm of your hand down, and from there you can access a bunch of commands. And that I find to be pretty useful and pretty
where are your eyes, Jay, when you're doing this thing with your palm of your hand?
It's like everything else. You just have to learn where these things are. I mean, that's, you know, like if I teach somebody how to drive, the first thing I will ask them to do is like put your lights on or put the flashers on. How easy is it to find the flashers on a car? It used to
Well,
be in the, and Robin, you certainly remember that better than I do. The flashers on the all-American cars used to be on the steering column, and you'd put your hand on the steering column, and there was the
wow.
flashers.
You mean you're talking about the turn signals? Yes, they are in the steering column. The
No,
flashers,
the
the
four flashers.
emergency
So,
flashers are not on the steering column and weren't. Mine are all in the middle of the dashboard or on the corner of the dashboard.
yeah, I'm talking about
Some,
the 70s or you know, way
no, I'm
back
talking
when.
about the 2019s and all that. They're still on the dashboards. They're not on the on the steering column for the emergency flashers. But what I'm saying is that you know, it's the old adage, if it ain't broke, why are you trying to fix it and make it better when I don't think it's being made better? And I commented on an earlier show about when you go rent a car now at an airport, first of all, what car do you get? If you've asked for a certain car, maybe it's because you own one of those and you know what to look for when you get into it to rent it for 1, 2, or 3 days or a week. If you don't, you really need to sit there, and if you want to use some of the features in the car, you really need to learn it. You should, for safety's sake, and this is, could be a safety discussion about this, you need to learn it before you drive out of the rental car place, because once you get on the road and you suddenly want to turn the radio on, if you're driving a Mercedes one time and you're going and getting a VW another time, and all so on and so forth, there's no commonality, or at least little commonality, between the manufacturers' menu screens. You know, it's like the old VHS versus Super 8 film or something like that in the past. I just don't think that this, and you talk about the manufacturers. The manufacturers hire designers to design interiors and all that. I've suggested on this show before that my first experience seeing the latest iteration of the Q5 Audi is that they forgot the grab handle on the passenger, on the driver's side door, that you could reach over to pull the door closed when it's wide open. You get in, you got to reach for something to pull the door closed, and there's no grab handle on this latest Q5 vehicle. I don't know why anybody could have let that get out before somebody knew that was, in my opinion, one of the stupidest things people looking at the
Robin,
cars are going to learn.
let's think
Okay?
positive. What do you really like about new cars? There's got to be
Not
something you
much,
like.
except that the quality is better. I'm not a fan of some of these similar designs where you can't tell a Chevy Malibu from a Hyundai Sonata or you know, that kind of thing. And in the SUV designs, you've got all the same designs. And now I'm watching similar designs in the front and rear lighting, where you're seeing front and wide, car wide DRLs, driver's daytime running lights, or and rear brake light, rear tail lights, full side to side in a Volkswagen Audi products. You know, why don't you tell me what you like about all the new cars?
Well, like you said, they're much the build quality is much better than it ever was. I think they're a lot safer than they ever were.
Yes.
The performance is much greater than it ever was. That gets to be a problem when you see. I got smoked recently at a light, and I was driving a
Were.
powerful SUV. Thought I'd be the king of the road at the start of at a green light. And I got smoked by a little Polestar. And at the next light, the woman just gave me this little smile. And that was the end of that. Yeah, back to what we've said before, electric cars are wicked fast. And that can affect, you know, it becomes in a world where where speed limits are everywhere, and rightfully so. There's a contradiction there somewhere, but overall, cars are way better than they ever were. It makes me a little sad because you look at, for instance, a Porsche Taycan, which is their electric sedan, and the Panamera, which is their ICE or hybrid sedan, and As great as the Panamera Turbo S is, a Taycan will be faster every day of the week, and by a long shot. So,
Well,
as much as we like hearing sports car engines, or it is a thing of the past in everyday driving. So.
I'm not. I'd like to let you. You've brought up this word performance and how you got smoked through the traffic light. I'm not concerned about that kind of differentiation between the cars, but I am. I go. Let's go back to this, to what I like about some of the cars, because I do
There
like.
we go.
I actually like the Cadillac designs quite a bit.
Yes.
I'm surprised that I like the Cadillac designs pretty quite a bit. But you know what? They are unique. They do separate themselves from just about every other car, a manufacturer's line of cars, across their model range board, and I think they're doing very well, probably as a result. I'm not sure how many people really pay much attention to the design of a car, but go back to the lighting thing I just brought up a few moments ago. The Lucid has a whole front. I passed a Lucid coming up to the broadcast area this morning, and I saw that Lucid way far away. But now I think there's a Honda that has a Lucid front end look, and another car that has a Lucid front end look with full frontal wide. Fairly bright DRL lights across them, and I can't tell the sometimes I can't tell whatever the Honda model is I'm referring to is from a Lucid from a difference from a distance. But I don't know why they're all going to these full width DRLs and even full width tail lights, not brake lights necessarily. The brake lights you seem to light up on the sides of the full lit rear lighting systems, which are red, of course. And I'm not sure why they are an exciting part of the design advancement going forward. It is, when one manufacturer has it and nobody else has it, you can tell that manufacturer's vehicles. But when they all start copying each other, I happen to like looking at the vehicles that are coming at me. Yes, that's a little distracting, but they are in front of me, and my eyes are on the road, and you can see them on the peripheral vision. But yeah, that's about. I like the Cadillac lineup, but I'm surprised I'm saying that to everybody. But that the cars are, I think, very good too. Jay, you mentioned something about the Cadillac. I think you drove one.
Yeah, I think they do have a pretty nice lineup. I mean, I still, I still have a quote unquote problem with that with where they're trying to go. Historically, they were the comfortable big boat American car,
That's for sure.
and it was all about luxury and comfort. And now they've become very
High
sports car
performance.
minded. They're about the only manufacturer that still put out a high performance 4-door sedan with a manual transmission. And
It'd
I
be
can think
interesting
of
to know how many of the Cadillac purchasers are buying them with the manuals, because you don't
I
think of the
actually I think quite a
Cadillacs.
few. I think quite a few.
That may be because that they're keeping it in their lineup of options.
And like any car offered with a manual or an automatic, the automatic will outperform the manual any day of the week
That's
these
true.
days. But us old geezers like to drive a manual from time to time.
Absolutely.
And but not in traffic. Again, road conditions these days are not conducive to old cars and manuals and light cars, and so this is the new world.
It is a new world, and I think that I don't know how many buyers really look at buy design. I recently went to, the cars, as I've said, and you agreed, are so good across the board. Doesn't really matter what you start out looking at if you are not paying attention to a specific brand in your head and or a specific look in your vision. Because if you walk in to any dealership, any manufacturer dealership, and it's talking about new cars now. We're not going to use cars. And you get in and go for the, well, the standard four corners, four rights in your back at the dealership, which you should never do if you're really serious. They all drive nicely. And the only thing you're not going to have there easily to deal with, and you won't have time by the time you've taken four rights out of a dealership and you're back in the parking lot to try any of these earlier topics of dashboard technology and menus to do anything, because you're not going to turn the radio on probably, you're not going to turn the heated seats on probably, and you're not going to do anything that you're going to do if you end up walking out and buying one of these cars, and then you learn about what you've purchased in the technology department. But all these cars are good. And that is one of the probably the best things that's happened with our manufacturers and car development over the last three decades. You know, they will go properly maintained, probably almost quite easily to 200,000 miles if you wanted to keep one that long. And we talked, or I talked about the length of financing that you may have to go to get your payments down on some of these cars because of the prices, up to as long as 8 years. If you want to keep a car 8 years, they'll certainly go 8 years. And you'll have to change tires and you'll have to change brakes. And if you're still in a fossil fuel vehicle, you'll have to change oil and lube it more than the electric options, alternatives.
Let's not forget shocks.
A long time ago, Jay, you mentioned about how many miles people were getting on their Teslas in California. Electric cars were mostly Teslas back when you made these comments on the show. And I can remember it. And you said they were going for long periods of time and they barely, you know, they might have to change a motor here and there, but they were very durable. And I think most electric cars are very durable.
Absolutely.
But we don't really know. You know, electric batteries seem to have warranty periods of sometime something around a certain number of years or 100,000 miles. I have known, and I think you probably have, Jay, known that the batteries in some of these electric vehicles have gone double that mileage and still they're still on their original battery systems. So I don't think that's something for people to be concerned about too much. You know, somebody asked me about extended warranty purchases on electric vehicles. Should they get it because they know the battery packs are very expensive? Should you have to replace one? But you know, I have this Hyundai Sonata, which has got it's a hybrid, so it's got the fossil fuel engine and the battery pack, and it came back in 2013, which is the year of this vehicle that I have, with a lifetime battery. But I've never needed a lifetime. You know, I now have 135,000 miles and I'm going strong with it.
That's more miles than you've put on any of your cars.
That's correct, because I drive it more. So, but that's absolutely correct. And yes, I do have to change the oil because of the fossil fuel engine, and it does take, you know, other things like the fossil fuel vehicle needs in periodic maintenance services. But other than that, I had no real problems with the car as I go towards 150,000 miles.
So you're going to keep it forever.
Well, listeners, our audience should be comfortable buying a new car. We go to the used car situation, and Jay, we've talked about that, and there are some good used cars around too. Jay, what do you think about buying from just independent used car dealers versus new car dealers that can offer you the pre-owned warranty situation on the same cars you might find at an independent non-dealer supported vehicle?
I don't know. You know, I've said it before. You know, I always start with the buying sites like Car Gurus, Auto Trader, and the likes, and now I forget the one that aggregates all the others. But you know, one of the things they do is rate dealers. So all the car, whether it's a new car dealer or a used car dealer, you know, one of the first things I'll do is go and read the dealer ratings, and you quickly see if the ad is a scam. You know, the pricing sometimes in those ads are like, you know, they seem too good to be true, but it's based on, you know, asterisk, a trade-in value of so many dollars, and whatever other condition, or financing the car with them at exorbitant interest rates. But all that, just a quick read of the reviews of dealers will give you an indication if you should even place the call or go there. And lots of times you'll see bad reviews on dealers where people have called and not gotten any callbacks, or called and they say, oh yes, come and see the car, and they drive 2 hours and there's no car there. Yes, they're trying to sell you another one. So
that is an unfortunate regular problem that seems to be happening. A recent relative of mine went to looking at Toyota Tacomas, and he was doing exactly what you said. He was online at maybe a dealership. I think it was a Toyota dealership, who was advertising as two or three specific used vehicles. And when he actually called to say he wanted to come down and talk to him, those cars were mysteriously unavailable. Yeah. It wasn't, oh, we sold it yesterday, but sometimes they say that too. They just weren't available to be seen. And yeah, he,
but the worst are the ones that make you drive there anyway. And then you drive, and then they corner you in the lot, and
they want to get you in and sell you a vehicle before you drive off, which is fine. But this particular situation, you see something on a website and you call about it, and they say, I want to come in and drive this 2021 Toyota Tacoma that is has 32,000 miles and is blah 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 priced, and they say, they never know where they are when you're talking to a salesperson at the place, and they have to go to some kind of sheet or some kind of source of an inventory situation, and they come back and tell you, well, that car's not around. And then you go, well, what about the 2024 that got 10,000 miles? But that's not around either, they say. This happened to this relative. And so then they had a third one that was around, and the person went down and drove it and bought it. So both people were happy. The buyer, the looker, a buyer turned buyer, and the dealer turned seller of one of the vehicles that the buyer had inquired about specifically before he got in his car and drove to the dealer. So that is just for people who want to buy used cars. You really need to do some homework, and you really need to ask the questions before, especially if you're a distance from a particular dealership or a particular seller of used cars. Make sure if you're looking at a particular vehicle online, either pictorially or at a list, that you call and find out if it's actually available to be seen and test driven before you drive the number of miles you might have to go. In our listing area, they're not, you have to go roughly 30 miles to get to any city of substance that has used car dealers, whether they're manufacturers dealerships or whether they're just ABC used cars and the like. Along a street where the dealerships may be located.
All good words. Yeah, I mean, buying a car can be stressful, and it can also be fun. And it also, it depends how urgent is your need for the car. And
I'd like to go to a new subject unless you've got something specific. And that is, let's talk. I'd like to talk about tire air pressures.
You do.
Tire air pressures are interesting because seldom do all four tires run at the same pressure during the course of a trip or driving a car. I found this to be the case. I have two Jeep Cherokees that recently had their tire pressure lights come on, and the Jeeps are very good because their indicators are four corner indicators. The Audis are useless as far as knowing which tire is low. I had a low pressure light on one of our Audis come on recently, and it came on in the form of an orange moniker of a tire, but it didn't tell you which tire it was. So you have to get up to the tire gauge and go around each tire to find which tire in the Audi.
Robin, I I find that hard to believe, and I'm not saying this
it's true.
Audi and Volkswagen come out, you know, a lot of the parts are behind the scenes the same, and I know my Volkswagen will tell you the pressure in each one of the tires. Well, and it's a 2015.
And the Audi A5, which is in my family's holdings, don't do that unless there's a place in, if you can find it in the menu, and I have not found it in the menu, which has a knob to locate things like that, as to show which tire is down. It just has an orange tire light growing up in the center of the dashboard. But the point is, when you go and fill up a tire with a air pressure, or with a tire filling place at a station, or if you happen to have one portable one in your car that you can attach on to each tire, and then you can sometimes set the pressure on the device, 33 pounds or 34 pounds, and wait for it to go off, because it'll go off when each tire reaches that. And then you go in the Audi, you have to reset it so that that orange tire goes off, because it does not reset itself. Whereas on the Jeeps, each of the corners, it shows you what the pressure is at the point, and the needing air monitor on that has gone off on its own. It resets itself, so there's no problem. But the funny thing about the Jeep is, then you're going to see that, oh, the left front's 33, the left rear's 33, the right front's 34, the right rear's 34, and then you drive it, and if you leave it on, they change as the tires heat up. So you do not want to worry about it. A tire that may vary in pressure from another tire on the car by as much as 2 or 3 pounds per square inch, per square inch, whatever. Because it's not going to affect the wear of the tire, in my opinion, to be enough to worry about if you see those four corners and they don't jive just because you thought you put 33 in each of the tires.
Yeah, you should do that once you've driven the car for a few miles anyway. You
know? That is true. Okay. Jay, you have anything new about European stuff?
No, I'm a little in the fog right now. Literally? my brain is in the fog. We had fog when we landed here this morning, but I haven't been out on the roads much. A lot of construction work, a little like in oh yes, back at home. A lot of new roads. We know the ones around our neck of the woods, but if you go into New York, you see new roads, and it's a little all over the country. Where did I go yesterday? Oh yeah. We were down in New Jersey, going down to side roads onto Newark Airport, and there too, a lot of construction, a lot of new roads.
It's very interesting. The new roads in the broadcast area, that's 41 between Lakeville and Sharon, has been paved. I would say what, halfway to Sharon or 2/3 of the way to Sharon before you go off the new paved area onto the current older paved area. First of all, the noise goes up quite a bit. Tire noise, that is, that you can hear, goes up quite a bit when you go off the newly paved smooth asphalt surfaces onto the older worn asphalt surfaces. It's rougher, so you can feel it through the car as well.
I want to bring up passing zones, new stripes, new passing zones. It just reminds me that some passing zones are very short, others are longer. Before making a pass, you should make pretty darn sure you're going to be able to pass the car.
That's right.
But you should also, nobody should panic. If somebody's making a move, that a car's coming at you and looks like it's in the middle of the road, slow down and pull to the side and
be aware.
Keep your eyes peeled.
For this week's show, it's time to say goodbye from Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.